Welcome, a huge welcome to you. If you're joining me for the first time, the second time, the third time, I am so glad you're here. I am your host, Jennifer Elizabeth Masters, and this is SOS for the Soul, Coming Home. I am a narcissistic recovery guide, an author, and I am taking you down this road of how to talk to a narcissist without losing your soul, without losing yourself. Now, one of the things I want to acknowledge right now is not everyone listening wants to leave the narcissist in their life. And I will tell you, I'm a perfect example because I have them all around me, my mother being one of them. I'm going to get into that in just a moment. So, you know, you may not want to cancel all of the people in your life because when you start counting them up, that may leave you kind of lonely. So what I want to say to you is this show is not about leaving and canceling all the people that are narcissistic in your life because, you know, when I was taking my Kundalini yoga teacher training, what my teacher taught us was the age of Aquarius is the age of the narcissist. And when you start to look around, I counted seven people in my midst that are narcissistic. And I'm going to tell you one of them I have had a relationship with for now 71 years. So some of you are married to them, some of you work with them, some of you were raised by them like I was, some of you love them deeply. And I have to say, the narcissists in my life, I love deeply. And so this is not about divorcing them. This is not about kicking them out of your life. I'm going to share some things that are going to be vastly different than what you have heard before. Why? Because I have spent 71 years living it. My mother is about to turn 104 years old, July the 10th, and today's June 3rd. And have we had challenges? Absolutely, we have. Have there been wounds? Of course. But I still love her. And this is what I want to tell you is life is about challenges. It is not about ease. It is about challenges. It is about navigating those challenges and shifting your perspective so that you can be happy no matter what's going on around you. So that is what I help you do. I help you shift your perspective. I help you love yourself fearlessly because when you do, you're not so focused on what those other people are doing and you stop expecting them to give you what you won't even give yourself. So I one of my favorite sayings is if you don't love yourself, if you don't love you, how can you expect anyone else to? All right, so guess where I'm going to be on my mother's birthday? I will be sitting beside her. I will be up in Canada telling her how wonderful she is and how proud I am of her and all she has done because she's taught me a lot of things. She's taught me that longevity is a wonderful thing, that you can heal a lot of things. You can learn a lot of things. You can shift if you wish to. And so I am going to tell you this. There was only one time, it was a period of about 12 months where I did not speak to either of my parents. And I'll just give you a quick little synopsis. My then husband, Bill Gates, and I had just arrived from, we were living in Maryland, and we drove all the way up to Toronto with our two little kids, our two little boys, We just walked in the door, and my little son David was 2 at the time. He was adorable. He would not harm a flea. He was a good little kid, 2 years old and beautiful as could be. And when he was excited, he did this. So he was patting my mother on her backside. My mother was very prudish. And she turned around and grabbed his wrist and spanked him. Don't hit grandma. So this is the worst this show is going to be. I know that's shocking, but I'm going to tell you, I stood there speechless. We had just driven this whole distance. I was like, what are we going to do? I looked at my husband. I said, come on, let's go to Dairy Queen. So we left. We weren't in the house 5 minutes. All that drive, all the way to Toronto, north of Toronto, to visit my parents. We went to Dairy Queen and we sat and we talked. And I said, I cannot stay because what we're doing is saying what my mother just did is okay. And it wasn't okay. I was standing right there. If you don't like what my child is doing, it is not your responsibility to correct the child. And you sure did not need to spank my little boy. All he did was love you in his way. He was so excited. So looking back, I realize I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know how to set a boundary without creating a war. I didn't know how to separate my mother's behavior from my love for her. And what I've learned since is that love and acceptance are not the same as agreement. I'm going to repeat that. Love and acceptance are not the same as agreement. Acceptance doesn't mean we approve of someone's behavior. It means we stop trying to turn them into something they are not. Because here's the truth. The only person that we can fix is who? Whom? Ourselves. The only person we can change or fix is ourselves. We cannot fix them. We cannot heal them. We cannot do their inner work for them. What we can do, my guides are quipping, what would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? Jesus would love them. This is about acceptance. So in this show, we're going to be talking about what a narcissist is, but before that, I've got some real poignant help for you. So get your pen, get your journal, and get ready because I've got you some writer downers, some things that you can absolutely use starting today. And one of the reasons that I am not pro-divorce, I'm going to tell you why, because I left my then husband who was a narcissist, and guess what? As an empath, it's like a moth to the flame. I'm going to go into this in a little bit more detail in a few moments. I thought, well, I will find somebody, somebody better, somebody that's not going to treat me that way. I didn't understand how to navigate that relationship. And guess what I did? I married 2 more narcissists and I dated 2 more as well. So let's see, how many is that? And so sometimes, we think that, oh, well, if I just leave this marriage, if I just leave this relationship, I'll find somebody that's not this way. But maybe the lesson for you, the lesson for me, how to learn to accept the other person. Because isn't this what we want? We all want to be accepted, loved for who we are. We don't want somebody to come along and say, well, I don't like your hair color, and I think you're too fat, and I think you should lose 40 pounds, and by the way, I don't like the way you talk. Nobody wants that. Acceptance feels so much better. And this is why when I go to visit my mother in July for her birthday, I will tell her how wonderful she is. Okay. So today we're not talking about leaving or canceling or trying to change that person. It is about how to stay connected to yourself when someone you love has narcissistic traits. And here's the truth, people, dear friends, listeners out there, we all have narcissistic traits. We all want to be significant. We all want to be loved. So how do you stop losing yourself while still loving someone that may never change? That's what we're talking about today. Are you excited? Because I sure am. All right. So the other thing about divorce that I want to say is, and you can do the research. I'm not going to give you the statistics except to say children of divorce are less likely to graduate high school, to go to college. They're less likely to make a lot of money. They're less likely to have successful marriages. They're more likely to get involved in drugs, alcohol, be arrested, get into trouble, and have miserable relationships because what do? They model what we taught them. So I am anti-divorce, although, you know, hey, this, what is it? Learn the lesson. And I have learned lessons. If I could go back and redo my life, which, you know, we can't do that. But what I can do is teach you what I have learned. All right, so the real issue isn't narcissism, it's acceptance. So much of our suffering comes from wanting people to be different than they are. And it doesn't matter whether they're a narcissist or not. They could be something else that's obnoxious to you. We want them to listen. We want them to understand. We want them to apologize. And we want them to become the person we know they could be. And sometimes we spend years waiting, but the truth is we can't change another human being. What we can do is accept them. And it doesn't mean you become a doormat. It doesn't mean you stop having boundaries. It just means that you stop arguing with what is and stop complaining about it. Maybe the reality is you're supposed to learn how to navigate a difficult relationship because who knows, maybe in a past relationship, you were the difficult one. So life does get easier when you stop fighting what is. Relationships get easier because instead of spending all of our energy trying to change somebody else, we begin asking the question, how do I stay true to myself while loving them exactly as they are? And this is where peace lives, not in changing them, in freeing yourself from the need to. That's the shift. Okay. So here's what happens when we don't have the tools. You can be exiled. You can be completely cut off from someone you love, a parent, a child, a sibling. You could be completely cut off from your grandchildren and your children because you might say the wrong thing to the wrong person, and you get triangulated. You get turned into the villain of the story you didn't write by someone who got to the jury before you did. Marriages end, jobs are lost, families fracture for years, sometimes permanently, all because of the way one conversation went down. And here's what breaks my heart about all of that. Most of the people on the receiving end of that exile, the divorce, the job lost, they never meant any harm. They were just being honest. They were just saying what they felt. They were just trying to have a real conversation. But with a narcissist, how you say something matters just as much as what you say. And today we're going to talk about both. So stay with me till the end because before we're done, I'm going to give you the exact tools, the exact words that you can use the next time you're standing right in front of a narcissist and you don't know what to say. You might have to practice in front of the mirror. So before I give you communication tools, you don't have to wait to the end for this. I'm going to give you 12 ways to make your life easier. No, we're only 16 minutes in, people. I'm rewarding you for being here. Here's the first one. these are rules for life, not just with dealing with narcissistic people. Accept reality. Stop wishing they were different. Stop wishing life was different. Number two, stop trying to fix them. Their healing is their responsibility. Number three, lower your expectations. Not your standards, your expectations. You know, most of the suffering that we have in this world, in this life, is because we expect too darn much. We should be happy with the little. Be happy with the beauty that surrounds you, the fact that you're alive to live another day. Holy cow! That in itself is a wondrous thing. I'm happy with my cat. I'm happy with my dog. How about you? I'm living in a beautiful place. The sun is shining. I live near the ocean. What could be better? You know, maybe see my grandkids more often. That would make it better. All right, so lower your expectations, not your standards, your expectations. Pick your battles. So like I say, these are rules for life, not just with narcissists. Not every disagreement deserves your energy. You know, sometimes, and if you look for an article by me, does it need to be said? I used to write blogs every single day. So here are some things that could help you. Orgasm for Life. It's a very sexy, hot book that will turn you on and give you lots of ways to love your partner better, consciously. Have a happier life. Sex is good. Sex is healing. Here's another one. Sacred relationships. Your relationships are all sacred. Pick your battles, people. And then this one is about how I healed, how I saw the light after, I don't know, how many years of narcissistic abuse. So what we focus our attention on is what grows. So stop complaining, stop bitching and moaning about how they are, and focus on the good, because everyone has good qualities. Don't take everything personally. That's number five. Are we counting? Most of these patterns existed long before you arrived, unless you are a parent of a narcissist. Number six, stop jading. J-A-D-E. It's an acronym. Don't justify, argue, defend, or explain. Stop jading. Don't justify, argue, defend, or explain. Number seven, let them save face. Correct privately, not publicly. This is important for all relationships. Have some respect for your partners and your children. Number eight, set boundaries without drama. Calm is power. Stay unemotional as much as you can. Number nine, and this is true for everyone, build a life outside of the relationship. One person cannot fulfill all your needs. And if you've been watching and listening to my podcasts previously, I've talked about that. Women have a tendency to expect way too much from their partners and lovers. Have some friends, have some community. All right, so number 10, practice emotional detachment. Loving someone doesn't mean absorbing all their emotions. Number 11, stay grounded. I walk barefoot every single morning. I let my dog and cat out. I walk barefoot, don't care about the weather. I stand barefoot on the grass, on the dirt, for at least 10 minutes every day. Get out in nature, journal, breathe, watch my Kundalini yoga videos for releasing anger and breath work. And do whatever brings you back to yourself. For me, it's walking in nature, going for a walk on the beach. And number 12, and this is mega, uber important. Love yourself as much as you love them. I'm going to say that one again, because this is paramount, people. Paramount. Most important. Love yourself as much as you love them. Don't give away the farm, for goodness sakes. Love yourself. For many of us, that's the hardest one of all. It was for me. But this is the core of what I teach. All right. So what is a narcissist? I had someone today, I was at the eWomen's Network group today in Calabasas. Beautiful women together sharing so much, and I shared what I do. And I had a lady ask me, so what are the characters of a narcissist? When I told her, she goes, oh, that's my daughter. I need you. All right. The word narcissist has been thrown around a lot. And I want you to be careful because labels become lazy. And not everyone who frustrates you or is a pain in the ass is a narcissist. Not everyone who is selfish is a narcissist. So let's get clear on what we actually mean, okay? You may want to write these down. So the clinical form of narcissist personality disorder, NPD, and I'm talking the full spectrum of narcissistic behavior, and because you don't need a formal diagnosis to cause real damage to the people around you, right? First, an inflated sense of self-importance. You might know somebody like this. Narcissists tend to believe they are special, more gifted, more deserving than anyone else in the room. Rules? Those are for other people. Waiting in line, apologizing, admitting fault. No, no, no. Not their favorite hobbies. Second, a constant need for admiration and validation. Compliments, people. Compliments. Tell them how wonderful they are, how great they smell, how fantastic they look, how great they feel. Compliments. Praise, recognition. They can never get enough. And you know what? I like them too. How about you? And when you don't get it, or when they don't get it, their mood shifts and they might get angry. They might crumple. They may get depressed. They may punish you or go into a full emotional weather event. Narcissists can have terrible rage. My mother had terrible rage. The men that I was married to had terrible rage. All right. Third, lack of empathy. And you, if you are married to one or have one in your life, you may be an empath. Moth to a flame. This is the one that hurts most. You assume that if someone sees your pain, they'll actually care. Not so. Narcissists struggle to truly step into another person's emotional experience. They may see your tears. They are just not moved by them. No, they don't care. Fourth, and that, I know that sounds harsh, but it's true. Fourth, extremely sensitive to criticism. Now, let me just say, now I am not a narcissist. And if you've worked with me, you know that I am not. I was extremely sensitive to criticism. You may be also, because I had it all my life. And when our self-esteem is low, most of us are sensitive to criticism, but narcissists are extremely so. And this confuses people, because narcissists can overtly seem extremely confident, bigger than life, but underneath that swagger is a fragile ego. And I'm going to tell you, that ego is very fragile. The grandiosity is an armor. It is a shield. And even gentle feedback can feel to them like a personal attack. You can say, that hurt my feelings. And suddenly they react like you set fire to their favorite sports car. All right. Fifth, they use relationships transactionally. People are often viewed through that lens. What can this person do for me? And sometimes this looks obvious. Other times it looks charming. And initially, if you're dating a narcissist, if you just met one, they're incredibly charismatic. They can make you feel so special. Relationship with a narcissist can be like a roaster, like a roller coaster, high, low in one day. But until you stop feeding the role that they assigned you in their story. Okay, so grandiose versus covert. There are different types of narcissists, right? Grandiose versus covert. Not all narcissists are the same. They don't look the same. Some are loud, some are dominant, and some eat up all the oxygen in the room, creating a vacuum. But that's the grandiose type, the one most people picture. But covert narcissists are trickier. They're quieter, wounded looking, highly sensitive, and often play the victim. That was my mom. Instead of controlling through force, they control through guilt, shame, or emotional withdrawal. Same wound, different costume. And, you know, if we're doing sessions together, we can get into this deeper. So narcissists show up everywhere. The boss, the filmmaker, the one who takes credit for your work, the parent who made everything about their feelings, maybe the partner who turns every disagreement into a character assassination, or the friend who somehow makes your birthday dinner about them. You know the type. Or someone, you tell them, oh my gosh, I had this terrible fall today. I fell down, I skinned my knees and my hands, I lent. Oh my gosh, you should see what happened to me. And they'll cut you off in the middle of your story. Well, that's nothing, because this is what, their problem will be far superior, bigger than yours. This is what they do. Okay. So here's what I need you to understand. They are wearing a mask. The grandiosity is a mask. I'm the best at this. I'm the best at that. I'm the biggest. I'm the best. I'm the best looking. I'm the sexiest. I'm too sexy for my cat. So the one who is always right and never wrong, who never apologizes, it's not confidence. It's a costume. It's a mask. Underneath this is the one of the most profoundly insecure human beings you will ever meet. The show, and it's a show, exists to protect them from ever having to face that insecurity. They make you feel small so they never have to. They criticize you so they never have to be criticized. They make sure you are the one who is never enough so they never have to face the possibility that they are not. They can dish it out. They can't take it. And that, my friends, is the most important thing that you can learn today. All right, so I'm going to ask you something difficult. I'm going to ask you, breathe. I'm going to ask you to have compassion. Compassion. I'm not saying feeling sorry for. Have compassion for the narcissist in your life. I do. Not the behavior. I'm not excusing the behavior. Never for the behavior, but for the wound, for the terrified child inside who never got what they needed, never learned another way. Here's the picture I want you to hold. Picture a toddler, 2, maybe 3 years old. They want something. You say no. And they lose it completely, screaming, throwing things, inconsolable. Maybe throwing down on the store at the checkout. Not because what they wanted was so important, but because at 2, they haven't learned how to survive disappointment. You've not learned that other people have needs too. You've not learned that the world does not revolve around you. All right, take another deep breath. The big news, the toddler never grew up. I'm not making fun. I am not. Coming from complete compassion here, you are dealing with the little boy, the little child that was hurt and never grew beyond that emotionally. They may hold a job, or own a company, raise children, sit in the pew, or be in the pulpit on Sunday morning. But inside is where it counts. They're the same toddler, raging because they didn't get what they wanted, terrified of being seen as less than, unable to tolerate disappointment, criticism, or anyone else being the center of attention. So they may talk over you. They may interrupt you. Something happened to them early, a trauma, a wound, a loss, something that happened that stopped their emotional development right there in the tra in its tracks. And I know someone, an adult, who had something terribly traumatic happen before birth. They weren't wanted. One of their parents wanted them to be exiled permanently, aborted. And that carried this person into adulthood. So we don't know where the trauma happened. We can't assume. In most cases, but not all, narcissism begins with a wound, a profound early wound of the self, maybe the parent who withheld love or approval, no matter what the child did. Maybe a home where showing vulnerability was dangerous. Maybe trauma is so overwhelming that the only way they could survive was to bury it completely, so deep that the conscious mind lost access to it. And here's something that may surprise you. Many narcissists have no conscious memory of the events that shaped them. Absolutely none. I want you to hold that for a moment. And this is where the compassion comes in. The brain of a child who experiences something unsurvivable makes an automatic decision. We cannot hold this function. We cannot hold this and function. And so the trauma gets stored. It's packaged away in a little box and locked in the brain, in the body, and in the nervous system. And so automatic responses that fire before the thinking brain gets involved. And Bessel van der Kolk wrote a definitive book on this. The body keeps the score. And what he found after decades of research is that the trauma does not live in the story we tell about what happened. It lives in the body. And this is why you can sit across from a narcissist and ask them about their childhood, and they may say, "It was fine, normal, nothing happened. My parents love me." And they may be telling you the truth as they know it, but their nervous system remembers, and it shows up for every single day as rage, control, or the desperate hunger for love and admiration. I can't even say the word, admiration. With no conscious story attached to explain it, they don't know. So think about the spouse who criticizes everything you do, but cannot take a single word of criticism themselves. Think about your boss who takes credit for your work and blames you for their failures. Think about your friend who makes every conversation about themselves, their children, their grandchildren that are so wonderful. That's the way you may feel. But if you want a friend, can you cancel everybody in your life? Can you? Do you want to? I don't. I want those people in my world, in my life. Why? Because it's what makes life interesting. Do you want to be alone the rest of your life? Do you want to be sit all by yourself? Because there's a lot of narcissistic people around. What you're seeing is every one of those people. A lot of people see them as being evil. It's a wounded child running around in an adult body, a survival strategy that worked once a long time ago and never got updated. It's a wound underneath the narcissism. And that is why we have compassion, not for the behavior. We spoke about that. Never for the behavior, but for the child who had no choice, the inner child that hasn't been able to heal. And like a moth to a flame, empaths and narcissists. I want to talk to you about this. Most people don't talk about it. If you're listening to the show right now, there's a very good chance that you are an empath like me. You feel things deeply, you give endlessly, you take on other people's pain as if it was your own. You've always been the one who tries harder, loves more, forgives faster. That was one of the things that my mother used to say about me. Jennifer, you forgive so quickly. I had to. I was living on a daily basis with a narcissist. If I wanted her love, I had to forgive her again and again and again. And you keep ending up with the same person, different face, different soul, and you can't figure out why. You're a magnet for narcissists, like a moth to the flame. We are drawn to one another with an intensity that feels like recognition. I am home. Yeah, and in a way it is, because very often the empath and the narcissist grew up in the same kind of home. The empath always learned to survive by becoming exquisitely aware of everyone else's needs, reading the room, managing the mood, making themselves feel so small so that everyone could feel big. Sound familiar? The narcissist learned to survive by making everyone else aware of their needs, demanding the room, requiring the mood to center around them, making everyone else small so they could feel big. Same wound, opposite adaptations. That's why we recognize each other so instantly. It feels electric. That is why the empath looks at the narcissist's intensity and mistakes it for depth. Oh my gosh, this feels so deep. And the narcissist looks at the empath, boundless giving and intuition and shining their light, and thinks, finally, somebody who will never stop loving me. Here's what I need you to hear. The fact that you were drawn to this person does not mean there's something wrong with you. It means something happened to you early, and your nervous system learned a particular kind of love, one that requires you to work for it, earn it, prove it. Prove yourself worthy of it. That's conditional love. It's a pattern, and patterns, unlike people, can be changed. So this is the work of unbecoming. It's my new book that's coming soon with a workbook and a set of cards to help you navigate your world. Unbecoming, the version of yourself that was trained to orbit someone else's chaos. Remembering the version of you that was never meant to be a moth to anyone's flame. All right, so what does a narcissist do? We're going to be talking about gaslighting, triangulation, and the worst of all, the silent treatment and flying monkeys. Think Wizard of Oz. All right, so you might recognize yourself here. So let's talk about tactics because the narcissist has a playbook. They don't know they're running it. It's not a conscious strategy. It's consistent, however. And once you can name what is happening to you, it loses a tremendous amount of its power. Recognize the narcissist really cannot help themselves. Gaslighting is the first tactic. Well, love bombing is actually the first tactic. When you start dating a narcissist, you may feel like this is the most amount of love that you have ever received from anyone. Adoration, admiration, glorious love, love making that will burn the house down. And then comes the gaslighting. It's insidious because it doesn't feel like abuse while it's happening. It feels like confusion. It feels like maybe I'm the problem. Maybe you're the problem. Gaslighting is when someone systematically makes you question your own reality, question your memory, your own perception of events. You say, I remember that you didn't close the window. And they say, no, I didn't. No, it didn't happen that way. They argue with you. You say, That happened to me, and they say, I never said that. I never did that. You're imagining things. You say that hurt me. They say, you're too sensitive. You're too much. You're overreacting. You're crazy. That word could be a trigger for you. And it happens so consistently, so relentlessly. So over the years, you start to believe them, and you start to think maybe you are too sensitive. Maybe you are crazy. Maybe I did imagine it. Maybe something is wrong with me. It's not an accident. That's the mechanism. Because a narcissist can make you doubt your own reality. Where they're never accountable for theirs. You're not crazy. You never were. What you experienced was real. Write things down, keep a record, not to use against them, but to keep yourself anchored in your truth. Don't keep score. That's not what I'm talking about. All right. The other thing is, and I've already touched on this, they can dish it out, but they can't take it. Think every time you've given your best in a relationship, a job, in the family, and it was criticized, not occasionally, consistently. The meal was never quite right. The work was never quite good enough. The effort that never measured up. Every single time. And yet you offered one gentle word of feedback in return. And Mount Vesuvius erupted. Rage, silence, punishment. That is the narcissist. They hold you to a standard they could never meet themselves. The criticism was never about the food or the work or the effort, it was about keeping you small. Making sure you never felt good enough because the moment you feel good enough, you might stop trying so hard to please them. And it's not just what you do. They find the place where you were the most tender, your appearance, your fat belly after having babies, your parenting, your saggy breasts, your intelligence, your past. And they go straight for those. Again and again, the same wound, the same place, until you start to believe that the cruelest thing they say about you is the truest thing about you. Breathe, 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 breathe. Take a deep breath. It isn't, but when you've heard it long enough, you forget that. Now, the next weapon is the silent treatment. And I want to call it what it is. It's abuse, plain and simple. It's not someone who needs space. It's calculated withdrawal of connection, pulling away the love, designed to punish you for stepping out of line. Maybe you've experienced this, days of silence, a week, 2 weeks, the person who is supposed to love you walking past you as though you don't exist, not because they need time to think, but because you said something they didn't like. Because you had a need of your own, because for one moment you stopped performing or stopped giving. And if there are children in the home, those children become the go-betweens. That was me, my parents, my mother wouldn't talk to my dad for weeks on end. Messengers in a war they didn't start and can't end. And those children grow up learning this is what love looks like. That contempt is normal, that silence is a weapon you reach for when someone disappoints you. They carry that pattern into every relationship they have as adults because no one ever showed them another way. When you grow up, you carry it with you until the work you do set it down. And that's what we do. The silent treatment says you don't exist to me until you comply. It's dehumanizing. And then there's triangulation because this one catches people completely off guard. It could be you said something to one person, the narcissist, and next thing you know, your whole family is not speaking to you. It happens in families of divorce. It happens with parents and grandparents. Instead of dealing with you directly, they go to someone else, talking behind your back. With a different version of events, their version, where they're the victim and you, my friend, are the problem. It looks like walking into a room and sensing something shifted and people who were warm and suddenly cooler. Oh, what happened here? Someone who used to be on your side is now ignoring you, distant. You can't name it, but you sure can feel it. This is triangulation at work. It could mean a year or two of silence from your own children, your own grandchildren, or your parents. What does it sound like? It sounds like, I've talked to your sister and she agrees with me. Everyone thinks you're unreasonable, or your own children. They are building a jury and they always make sure they speak to the jury first. All right, so enough of that. Flying monkeys, flying monkeys. In the Wizard of Oz, the witch's army, in narcissistic dynamics, flying monkeys are the people the narcissist has recruited, consciously or not, to carry their message, reinforce their narrative, and apply pressure on their behalf, maybe even the silent treatment. So here's what you need to not do. Do not recruit them back. Do not tell your side of the story. Do not try and convince them that they're wrong. You'll never win. All you can say is, I love you. And I'm not going to discuss this with you. And don't. There's no amount of explaining that will shift it. All right, so now here's the children. The children are the pawns in this war. Whether they're young or still in the home, they grow into adults who grew up. The impact is profound and it deserves to be named. Children of narcissistic parents learn very early that love is conditional, approval must be earned, and expressing a need or an emotion can be dangerous. Maybe that was you, it was certainly me. They become hypervigilant. And then after divorce, there's parental alienation, where the narcissistic parent looks calm, loving, reasonable, and the targeted parent who is innocent is fighting for the relationship with the children, and the parent that is emotional, reactive, desperate, loses. It happens again and again. Okay. So can a narcissist change? And I know this is sitting in the back of your mind. It's unlikely. I can't say never, but it's unlikely. They may have a voluntary collapse of defenses. Their conditions might change in a crisis, a loss so significant, a health collapse. But the question is, you know, there could be a crack where the light gets in. And here's the thing that I want to tell you. Love them. Love them. Okay, so quickly here, I promised you real tools, how to talk to the narcissist. And these are not manipulation, they are wisdom. All right, one of the biggest mistakes people make, lead with them, not your pain. You hurt me. You never listen. You make me feel invisible. Mm-mm-mm. No. Instead of, you never make time for me, I feel so much better about us when we spend quality time together. Do you think we could make that happen? Do you see the difference? You're allowing them to feel good. You're not trying to destroy them. Because I'm going to tell you, narcissists hurt. You don't want to make them collapse. You're letting them be the hero in the conversation. Address the behavior, not the person. Improve, you're so selfish too. When this happens, it's really hard for me. One attacks identity, the other addresses behavior. Private, calm, behavior focused, never character focused. Remember the acronym JADE. J-A-D-E. Justify, argue, defend, or explain. Never do it. When someone twists your words, rewrites events, or blames you, it's human nature. You want to explain. You want to make them see the truth, but they can't. Don't waste your breath. The moment you start over explaining, you've lost. And forget about winning. This is not about winning. Trying to win, you lose the relationship. Instead, try, I hear that you see it that way. This will be up on YouTube, and I hope that you will like and subscribe. You'll be able to stop the video. You can stop this, listen, write it down. Or that's not how I remember it, but I'm not going to argue. How about this one? I love you and I don't agree. You do not owe anyone a debate. Set limits, but not ultimatums. If you don't do this, I'm leaving. Oh. Don't do that. A limit is about your behavior, not controlling theirs. A limit sounds like I'm not able to continue this conversation when the voices are raised. When voices are raised, I'm going to step away and we can come back to this when we're both more able to be calm, when we're both calm. Limits are about your behavior. Ultimatums are about controlling somebody else's. Stay in your own lane. Guard your own soul. The most important tool is staying connected to who you are. Extended time with a narcissist can slowly erode your sense of self. They rewrite history. I know it took me a long time to come back to who I am, to completely love myself. This is what I help you do. Discover who you are. You're wonderful, amazing. Time in nature, silence, prayer, meditation, Kundalini yoga. Stay connected to yourself. You need a voice that tells the truth to you. And that voice must become louder, even if it's internally, than theirs. It's hard work. It's holy, sacred work. But before you go today, I want you to remember this. If you're in relationship with a narcissist, a parent, a sibling, a partner, a boss, a husband, a wife, and you're feeling emotionally drained, loving someone who cannot meet you fully can make you feel lost. It's emotionally painful. But I want to say staying isn't weakness. Sometimes staying with wisdom and boundaries is the bravest thing that you can do. And sometimes leaving is the bravest. I'm not saying stay in a relationship that is abusive. I am not recommending that. If you're being hit or beaten or abused physically, I'm not recommending that you stay in that or where your life is threatened. You know what is right for your soul. And my hope for you today is simple. That you remember who you are. That no manipulation, criticism, or twisted conversation pulls you away from your personal truth. You're not crazy. You're not too much, and you never were. And if today's show resonated, pay attention deeply to that because your nervous system recognizes truth when it hears it. And this is about you coming home to you. If you're ready to go deeper, go to my website, Jennifer Elizabeth Masters, and book a call with me. If you're really invested in healing yourself, there is a free session to see if we could work together. I would love to meet you there. I'm Jennifer Elizabeth Masters, sending you much love. Do that holy, sacred work and come home to you. Coming home, coming home to me. I don't have to disappear.